Encomium versus vituperation. Have you ever had this maddening sort of conversation? That movie was the best. Well, why was it the best? Because it was amazing. Well, why was it amazing? It just was. You have to see it. Well, what made it amazing? I don't know. I just liked it. Well, what did you like about it? You probably have heard similar instances of people talking forcefully, using strong praise or condemnation about all sorts of subjects. You might hear, "She's so cool, so fine, so awesome." Or you might hear, "That's so intolerant, so hateful, so rotten." As you listen to this type of conversation, you might realize that the speaker has passionate opinions, but not a lot of understanding. These opinions are like a big puddle. A puddle can be wide and reflect the sky and look like a lake, but it's not very deep below the surface. In the same way, opinions can seem meaningful without being very deep. Uninformed opinions are everywhere. All the time, people go to the ballot box to vote for the next senator or mayor, and they know almost nothing about the person for whom they are voting. They vote for candidate Happy Hoopla because they heard some bits and pieces about her in social media and formed an opinion from that. People often talk long and hard about sports, superheroes, celebrities, nutrition, love, and marriage, but have they really thought carefully about the subject? Perhaps sometimes they have, but too often, people debate hot topics with more emotion than understanding. One of the purposes of this book is to help you to think more deeply about things, to be able to organize information so that you have solid ground for judgment, so that your opinions are meaningful. Why is this important? Because the world has need of thoughtful people. Only thoughtful people are able to understand this complex world, and only thoughtful people qualify to be trusted leaders in politics, education, religion, and science. There are far too many uninformed blabbermouths in the crowd. Opinions without serious understanding are not only unreliable, they can also be downright hurtful. How many times have people marched off to war or joined a rioting mob because they had passion but no serious understanding? In this book, you will learn to make informed judgments about historical people and their actions, and you will be asked to praise and blame these individuals by sorting evidence into categories and persuasively explaining your opinion. Before you do that, take a look at a speech praising Abraham Lincoln, the 16th President of the United States. When Abe was shot and killed on Good Friday, April 14, 1865, the nation reeled with shock and disbelief. This was the man who had carried the United States through the brutal Civil War and had kept it from splitting into two nations. All across the country, funeral sermons were given praising the virtues of the great emancipator. The following address, which was delivered in the White House, is typical of the speeches that were given. The speech was given by Dr. Phineas Gurley, pastor of the New York Avenue Presbyterian Church where Lincoln attended. It was published in the New York Times, April 20, 1865. Probably no man since the days of George Washington was ever so deeply and firmly embedded and enshrined in the very hearts of the people as Abraham Lincoln. Nor was it a mistaken confidence and love. He deserved it well, deserved it all. He merited it by his character, by his acts, and by the whole tenor and tone and spirit of his life. He was simple and sincere, plain and honest, truthful and just, benevolent and kind. His perceptions were quick and clear, his judgments were calm and accurate, and his purposes were good and pure beyond a question. Always and everywhere he aimed and endeavored to be right and to do right. His integrity was thorough, all-pervading, all-controlling, and incorruptible. Now you might be thinking that the speaker is really laying it on thick, and you'd be right. If he was talking about almost anyone other than Abe Lincoln, you'd probably say, baloney. Actually, these words are not baloney, but rather they belong to an ancient tradition of rhetorical speech known as encomium. Encomium is warm, glowing praise about a specific person or thing, usually in the form of a speech or an essay. Unlike the empty praise you saw in the first example about the movie, an encomium thoughtfully praises a specific person or thing and uses evidence to support its positive point of view. We most often hear encomia, plural for encomium, during funeral speeches or eulogies. When people are grieving for the dead, it is appropriate to remember the deceased good's qualities and turn a blind eye to their bad. The phrase, de mortuis nil nisi bonum, warns us to speak only good of the dead, and comes to us from the ancient Romans, which shows us that this idea is pretty old. On the flip side of encomium is vituperation. Vituperation is condemnation of a specific person or thing, and it, too, uses evidence to support its negative point of view. You may be surprised to learn that, despite the glowing words in the previous funeral speech, many people, both then and now, have spoken ill of our 16th president. Many people blamed him for the Civil War and for crimes committed by the Union Army as it marched through the South. John Wilkes Booth, Lincoln's assassin, called him a greater tyrant than Julius Caesar of Rome. A northern newspaper man, Marcus M. Pomeroy from Wisconsin, called Lincoln the fungus from the corrupt womb of bigotry and fanaticism, and a worse tyrant and more inhuman butcher than has existed since the days of Nero. These bitter words spoken against Lincoln, although full of condemnation, are not vituperation in the classic sense. These words are a diatribe, a rant, a heavy sledgehammer used to pound a person down. With vituperation, you should not see spit flying off of the page. You should not see hanks of hair being ripped from somebody's head. Rather, vituperation carefully uses thoughtful arguments to attack a specific person or thing. Historian Lyon Gardner Tyler, son of President John Tyler, wrote, "I think Lincoln was a bad man, a man who forced the country into an unnecessary war and conducted it with great inhumanity." These words are much more in line with the vituperations you will be writing in this book. Here is the reason we write vituperations rather than flinging thoughtless insults. We want to expose what is wrong while at the same time sounding reasonable ourselves. There's nothing more off-putting than a red-eyed, spit-spewing mudslinger, even when the mudslinger is telling the truth. We want our readers to trust our opinions and to be convinced by them. We want to win them over because we believe firmly in a conclusion that we have arrived at carefully. To recap, an encomium thoughtfully praises a specific person or thing and uses evidence to support its positive point of view. A vituperation thoughtfully attacks a specific person or thing and uses evidence to support its negative point of view. Whereas the commonplace exercises in the previous book attacked or praised general types of people, tyrants, cowards, heroes, vituperations and encomia name names. They are detailed rather than general. It's the difference between a forest, general, and the Black Forest, specific. A city, general, and Paris, specific. Or a building, general, and the Eiffel Tower, specific. Commonplace essays might, for example, examine artists broadly, while vituperation and encomium essays might attack or praise some specific artists, such as Salvador Dali or Maria Izquierdo. By writing essays that praise and blame specific people or things, we can get a clearer picture of what is praiseworthy and what is blameworthy. We want to befriend, to imitate, to follow, to cheer for, to campaign for people who are praiseworthy. We want to challenge, to oppose, to resist, to redeem, to campaign against people who are blameworthy. Encomium and vituperative essays can also be written for objects, events, and even animals. We want to enjoy, to possess, to create, to share, to celebrate things that are praiseworthy. We want to avoid, to destroy, to prevent, to fix, to warn others about things that are blameworthy. By clarifying what is praiseworthy or blameworthy, we can better figure out some of life's confusing questions, such as, who should my role models be? What pursuits are worthy of my time and attention? Who should I seek to spend my life with? How do I want to be remembered after I die? Most of the supporting evidence you can use to praise or attack a person fits into common categories such as background, fine or poor qualities, and career. You can subdivide these categories still further into ancestors, including parents, country or education, personal character, abilities or virtues or vices, and achievements or lack of worthwhile achievement. As you can see, a great deal about a person's life is covered by these categories. They are the building blocks for making a case for or against the way someone from history lived his life. Do you admire someone greatly? How would you describe or categorize what you admire about her? Do you admire this person's physical strength? Or perhaps you admire her intelligence? Does this person defend the weak and the powerless? Did her parents provide a great example? Did her education make a worthwhile impact on her life? How does she use her wealth and her talents? On the other hand, do you disrespect someone greatly? How would you describe or categorize what you disrespect about her? Do you dislike the rudeness of her manners? Do you dislike this person for the way she treats other people? Do you disrespect her for using her power in harsh and cruel ways? Do you hate the harm she has caused from her greed and selfishness? Did her parents spoil her or provide a bad example? Did her education fail to give her knowledge or wisdom? These are questions that can help you to build a case for or against a person. Encomium and vituperative essays will advance your ability to think and reason more clearly, to express your point of view more effectively, and to support your ideas with solid reasons. They will help you to understand better what you believe. Writing and discussion usually do that. In addition, you will be gaining research skills as you comb through texts to find quotes and examples, which will make you a more careful, thorough person. All of this practice in reading and writing will expand your intelligence and the things you can think and talk about. That will make you a more interesting person, somebody who has a sound opinion and who can make thoughtful conversation. These essays will also help you to become a more discerning person. They will help you to gain wisdom about your fellow human beings, and you will know more about what virtues to pursue and what vices to avoid. That will make you a more thoughtful and helpful son or daughter and a better friend. Before you get into the nitty-gritty of the essays themselves, in this lesson, you will take a closer look at some historical examples of encomium and vituperation. See if you can tell the difference between them. Philip of Macedon, ancient king, 382 to 336 BC. To call Philip of Macedon treacherous is not idle abuse. If there be any soldiers experienced in battles and campaigns, Philip is jealous to steal the glory of their actions for himself. His jealousy, among other failings, is excessive. Or if any man be generally good and virtuous, unable to bear Philip's daily intemperances, drunkenness, and indecencies, he is pushed aside and accounted as nobody. The rest about him are brigands and parasites and men of that character, who will get drunk and perform dances which I scruple to name before you. Hua Mulin, warrior maiden, circa 6th century BC. Hua Mulin is one of the most famous and fearless warrior maidens in history. A semi-legendary figure, Hua Mulin most likely grew up a skilled horse rider and archer in the Northern Wei Dynasty. When war came to China from the north, she took her elderly father's place in the army and fought for 12 years against the nomadic tribes later known as the Mongols. When her service was over, Hua Mulin refused any money for her efforts and returned home. Her humility and feelings of patriotism prevented her from accepting reward. Instead, she preferred to live quietly with her family. Hua Mulin represents the intense love for family and duty to country that characterizes the Chinese. Genghis Khan, Conqueror, 1162 to 1227. One of the most famous military leaders of all time, Genghis Khan, built the most powerful army in the world during the 12th century. His source of strength came from the warlike tribes of the steppes of Asia, which he managed to unite in 1206. Khan was ambitious and cunning and had no pity for the people he conquered. His armies tore through huge territories, including most of Asia, and his greed for power and control caused the cruel deaths of more than 1 million people. His warriors slaughtered everyone who stood in their way, even people they promised to spare if they surrendered. In the city of Urgench alone, more than 100,000 people were killed on Khan's orders, and the children were sold as slaves. Alfred, King of England, 849 to 899. After the Viking invasions, England lay in smoking ruins. To restore a land in such a condition to peace and quiet, and safety and freedom, from fear of harm, a man might well be proud. But King Alfred did more. He established churches and schools. He made just laws. He saw to it that they were justly executed. For the man who brought about all these good results, no praise can be too high. In the midst of all the fighting, and the weariness, and the anxiety, and the temptation, and the responsibility, King Alfred lived a calm, simple, unselfish, blameless life. To him, of all the sovereigns of England who have served their country well, may the title The Great most justly be given. Ulysses S. Grant, Army General and U.S. President, 1822-1885. The great distinguishing qualities of General Grant were truth, courage, modesty, generosity, and loyalty. He was loyal to every work and every cause in which he was engaged, to his friends, his family, his country, and to his God. And it was these characteristics which bound to him with hooks of steel all those who served with him. He absolutely sunk himself to give to others honor and praise to which he himself was entitled. No officer served under him who did not understand this. I was a young man and given much larger commands than my rank entitled me to. General Grant never failed to encourage me by giving me credit for whatever I did or tried to do. If I failed, he assumed the responsibility. If I succeeded, he recommended me for promotion. Harriet Tubman, abolitionist and Underground Railroad conductor, 1822-1913. One of the most daring conductors along the Underground Railroad was Harriet Tubman. She helped so many of her fellow African Americans to escape that they called her Moses because she had led them out of the land of bondage. Again and again, in spite of the danger in being caught, she ventured into the southern states to bring back a band of runaway slaves. And she was so clever and so full of resource that she always brought them safely away. Harriet was both brave and clever, and when the Civil War broke out, she served as a scout for the Northern Army, earning the praise of those who employed her. Oscar Wilde, novelist and playwright, 1854-1900. That sovereign of insufferables, Oscar Wilde, has ensued with his opulence of twaddle and his penury of sense. He has mounted his hind legs and blown crass vapidities through the bowel of his neck, to the capital edification of circumjacent fools and foolesses, fooling with their foolers. He has tossed off the top of his head and uttered himself in copious overflows of gashly bosh. The ineffable dunce has nothing to say, and says it with liberal embellishment of bad delivery, embroidering it with reasonless vulgarities of attitude, gesture, and attire. There never was an impostor so hateful, a blockhead so stupid, a crank so variously and offensively daft. And a translation of the Bierce description. That king of intolerables, Oscar Wilde, has come along with his wealth of silly chatter and his poverty of sense. He has climbed his hind legs and blown gross stupidities through the bottom of his neck, to the excellent education of surrounding idiot men and idiot women, playing with their midget minds. He has tossed off the top of his head and spouted a gush of filthy nonsense. The indescribable moron has nothing to say, and says it with a flourish of bad delivery, decorating it with unthinking tastelessness of attitude, gesture, and dress. There never was a fraud so hateful, a blockhead so stupid, a kook so variously and offensively crazy. Adolf Hitler, German dictator, 1889-1945. In Hitler is a monster of wickedness, insatiable in his lust for blood and plunder. Not content with having all Europe under his heel, or else terrorized into various forms of abject submission, he must now carry his work of butchery and desolation among the vast multitudes of Russia and of Asia. The terrible military machine, which we and the rest of the civilized world so foolishly, so supinely, so insensately allowed the Nazi gangsters to build up year by year from almost nothing, cannot stand idle lest it rust or fall to pieces. So now this bloodthirsty gutter snipe must launch his mechanized armies upon new fields of slaughter, pillage, and devastation. Vivian Leigh, actress, 1913-1967. Apart from her looks, which were magical, she possessed beautiful poise. Her neck looked almost too fragile to support her head, and bore it with a sense of surprise, and something of the pride of the master juggler who can make a brilliant maneuver appear almost accidental. She also had something else, an attraction of the most perturbing nature I had ever encountered. It may have been the strangely touching spark of dignity in her that enslaved the ardent legion of her admirers. Roberto Clemente, baseball player, 1934-1972. Roberto Clemente was not only an excellent baseball player, but he was also a loving husband, father, and philanthropist. He was proud of his Puerto Rican heritage and won many awards, both in baseball and for his extensive charity work. Twice he led the Pittsburgh Pirates to win the World Series. Clemente also had a compassionate heart. He was killed in a plane crash on his way to deliver supplies to victims of a Nicaraguan earthquake. Today, a life-size statue of Clemente stands in Clemente Park in the Bronx. Ronald Reagan, U.S. President, 1911-2004. In his lifetime, Ronald Reagan was such a cheerful and invigorating presence that it was easy to forget what daunting historic tasks he set himself. He sought to mend America's wounded spirit, to restore the strength of the free world, and to free the slaves of communism. These were causes hard to accomplish and heavy with risk. Yet they were pursued with almost a lightness of spirit. For Ronald Reagan also embodied another great cause, the great cause of cheering us all up. His politics had a freshness and optimism that won converts from every class and every nation, and ultimately from the very heart of the evil empire. With the lever of American patriotism, he lifted up the world. Griselda Blanco, gangster, 1943-2012. Born in 1943, Griselda Blanco lived a notorious life as the godmother of drugs. She started her education in crime as a youngster, working as a pickpocket in Colombia. As an adult, she was the leader of a gang that smuggled drugs into the United States, more than 3,400 pounds of cocaine each month. Blanco was a ruthless woman and ordered her own squad of assassins to murder anyone she considered an enemy. She was probably responsible for over 40 murders throughout her life. Her heartlessness is truly despicable, and she influenced her sons and other family members to be part of her criminal gang. Because of this, much of her family, including Blanco herself, was murdered.